This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joyful, joyful.
You're in the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 with the
Priest,
the Pom,
and the Poof.
This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
You are on Joy 94.9 and you are in the Spirit Lounge. Thanks very much to the guys from M&M Show for their lovely introduction and looking after us in the last hour. Now, on the Spirit Lounge tonight, we are talking to our travel expert, Jake Bartlett, and also I'm joined in the studio by a very special lady named Katie. She's going to be helping out on the Spirit Lounge. So welcome, Katie, to the Spirit Lounge team.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Very happy to be here with you, Andrew.
So tonight you've chosen some of the music.
I have.
And the first one that we've got coming up is by Angus and Julia Stone. Tell us, why did you choose this song?
They're favourite artists of mine, and also because the theme tonight is travel, and I've done a bit of travelling in my time, and I think they are just a wonderful artist to listen to when you're kind of cruising along and looking out at all these kind of amazing things that you're seeing for the first time. They're just, it's very reflective.
It's good. Is it good journeying music?
It's good journeying music. It really is.
All right. Well, let's kick it off. This one's called Walk It Off.
Joy 94.9.
So you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 with the Pom and the Poof. And we are joined tonight by our travel expert, Jake Bartlett of Travel Counsellors, and we'll be exploring Christmas around the world in 10 different locations. The world is made up of many countries, many cultures and many religions, each with their own belief system, rituals, festivals and holidays. And in many countries, the biggest holiday of all is Christmas. Whether you celebrate it as the birthday of Jesus or just a day to spend time with your family, exchange gifts and enjoy some food and wine, come the end of December, you can't ignore that Christmas is all around. Now, excuse me, the first place I looked at was Italy, because I guess that the Vatican especially is the home of the Roman Catholics. And I know that I, when I was living in Europe, used to see on TV a lot Midnight Mass on Christmas Eve, which was very popular, but also the Pope on Christmas Day in St. Peter's Square would also have a service, I think, around lunchtime. Now, that is the home of the Roman Catholic Church. It's been the residence of all popes since 1377. Mm. Get that. Lots to see there. Obviously, St. Peter's Basilica, the Vatican Library, the Sistine Chapel, made famous by the movie
Da Vinci Code.
Thank you.
Testing me there.
So, Jake, Italy, Rome, Vatican City, the smallest city in the world, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it conjures up beautiful images, Italy. It's just one of those iconic destinations with something for everyone. And I guess, as you mentioned, at Christmas time, particularly for the Catholic followers, for Catholicism, it is the ultimate sort of place, I guess, for pilgrimage for that time of year.
Yeah.
To have the Midnight Mass and then also to receive the Pope's message on Christmas Day. So literally thousands gather for that very significant event. But obviously being in Italy at that time of year, there's lots more beyond the Vatican and Rome. And particularly throughout Europe, there's this beautiful sense of the essence of Christmas in terms of Christmas markets and the lights. And they really, it's quite the opposite, I guess, to what we do in Australia. And we'll go into Australia later and how we celebrate Christmas. But, you know, in terms, you've sort of conjured up the image of the white Christmas and all that. And that's really what I also always envisage about, you know, being throughout Europe and experiencing all those beautiful scenes and, you know, the snow and all those sort of things. So, yeah, so if you are heading to Italy and, you know, obviously having the Christmas Mass, but many of the other regions of Italy as well. You know, up north, you have also obviously Verona, which was famous for the scene of Romeo and Juliet. They also get right into the celebration. Mm. And, you know, there's lights and illuminations all over. And also in Torino, which is in Italy's Piemont region, it's over 20 kilometres of, you know, vast. Some actually the finest illumination artists from Europe gather at that time of year to create this amazing spectacle throughout the city. So it's really, really beautiful.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, and then obviously you have the French Alps, and they have their own little tradition on at midnight on Christmas Eve. All these skiers come flying down the mountain with their, you know, with their torches and bring in Christmas. So I just think that would be an amazing spectacle to see as well.
It is awesome. I've skied once in the Dolomites, and they did a similar light festival on skis, and it is totally awesome. It's magical.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Dolomites obviously be a really popular ski region. Actually had some honeymoon. Mooners go there last year and had a ball. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's a popular, really popular and beautiful destination. So and you know, as I mentioned, the Christmas markets are out throughout Italy, throughout many parts of Europe, actually Germany, France. It's a really beautiful time to be there. So
and Italy's pretty chilly at Christmas. So if you're in northern Italy, you get snow if you're up near the mountains.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. I mean, it's. I guess you'd probably be intending to go for sort of more of the winter scenes. You know, so obviously skiing throughout Europe is great at that time of year. Yeah. And it's apart from you know the Christmas New Year period, it is the low season. So often it is a great time for travellers to get sort of off peak rates and things like that. So. Although it's a little chillier, it does have its advantages for travelling on the Aurora.
Now, talking about cold, I'd like to go further north, and I would like to go to our second destination tonight, which is Iceland. Now, I'll never forget, my mum and dad went to Iceland and Greenland years ago, and I'll never forget my mum saying, well, Greenland is icy and white, and Iceland is green. I love it. And she was saying, well, they're named wrong. It should be the other way around. But I was researching Iceland, what prompted me was I saw the most fabulous program the other night on the Northern Lights, which I have to say is on my bucket list.
Absolutely.
I really want to do that.
Mine too.
But festivities for Christmas in Iceland start around the 12th of December. And when 13 Yule lads, who were once like evil trolls, love this, but have mellowed to be more like mischievous Santas, or maybe they're the elves. Can trolls perhaps be elves? They come down from the mountains into the town. They arrive one at a time, starting 13 days before Christmas, and then begin to leave again the day after. And they have names like, I don't know whether someone's making this up, Bowl Licker, Pot Scraper, and Door Slammer.
Maybe they are making that up.
I haven't,
but it sounds very joyful.
And children in Iceland do a similar thing to many other parts of Europe. They leave their shoes out on the windowsill for the Yule lads, and if they've been good, they wake up to find a gift. But if they've been bad, apparently they get rotten potatoes.
It's a bit of a dud prize.
But there are a couple of things I'd love to hear about. Obviously, the Blue Lagoon is very famous, and the Northern Lights are very famous in Iceland.
Absolutely. The Aurora Borealis, it's one of those iconic things. As you said, it's on your bucket list. It's definitely on mine. It's one of those amazing natural phenomenons that you can only actually experience in the winter in the cooler months. And when there's very little daylight, often, you know, sit down to 3 or 4 hours a day. So, and then this amazing spectacle happens.
And it's potluck, isn't it? I mean, you can't, if you go up to Iceland to see the Northern Lights, you're not guaranteed to see them, are you?
It's not guaranteed, no. So it is one of those amazing things that if you do get to experience, you feel very, very blessed to have that experience.
Because this program I was watching, I know Joanna Lumley's done the most beautiful program on it, but I was also watching Phil Spencer do it, you know, the location guy. And he was he does a travel program and with Kirsty Allsop, and they were up there. And he was saying that it's an occurring phenomenon that happens when gas produced by solar activity on the surface of the sun hits the earth. And it then reacts with the earth's magnetic field, which causes the frissons of colour. And the most common colour is green, and it's like ribbons. But then if you're very, very lucky, you'll see the reds and purples and everything. And I must say, the bits I've seen on TV have been kind of quite green, quite aqua.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's fascinating to know a little bit of the science behind it all and how it all actually happens.
But it sounds absolutely amazing. And of course, the other thing that I've wanted to do for ages, which is just outside Reykjavik, is the Blue Lagoon. You heard of the Blue Lagoon?
Yes, it is. It's one of the sort of iconic things to do there. And you know, apart from the peak season, obviously, is in, you know, the summer months for Europe, and that's really, you know, when the bulk of tourism, but often a lot of the Icelanders say that we miss out on the best aspects of visiting there because we, you know, migrate there in the summer months. But having said that, you know, accessibility in a lot of parts of Iceland do become very, very hard, you know, during the winter months. Yeah, because it's, you know, it's quite an extreme sort of climate.
Well, it's very, very, it's close to the North Pole, isn't it?
Yes, it's pretty much, as far as north as you can go. But having said that, I mean, you know, off-season activities, you can do all sorts of fun things like dog sledding and fishing and glacier tours and
tobogganing.
Yeah, and others love this one. Even for golf enthusiasts, they even love to golf on snow-covered courses with orange balls. How funny is that? So even in the winter, you can still go golfing.
So you play golf in your snowshoes.
That's one from my bucket list.
Golfing with your bright orange ball, I think that'd be fun.
You're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and we're looking at different destinations to visit during the Christmas period, and we'll be back with you shortly.
Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Dolly Diamond, letting you know that you simply must come to Carnival Day. Pirarung Ma, January 13 from 11 a.m. Well, there's two stages full of live and free entertainment. Over 90 stall holders bearing their wares, plus all your favourite GLBTIQ community groups. There's even a kids zone and youth space. So come join me and all the fun of Carnival Day as part of Midsummer Festival 2013. Joy 94.9 is official radio partner of Midsummer Festival 2013.
And you're on Joy 94.9 on the Spirit Lounge with Andrew and Katie. And tonight we're talking to Jake Bartlett about Christmas experiences overseas.
Yes, he was just talking about the Northern Lights, and you were saying how it would be absolutely amazing to go and visit the Northern Lights.
I'm absolutely set on the idea. I think it would be very cold. It's a long way north, but it would just be an amazing spectacle to see if you were able to be lucky enough to witness that.
You'd have to pack your jacket and your snowshoes.
Absolutely.
Now, you've chosen a track for the next for our next track. This one's by Mumford & Sons. Why did you choose this one?
Well, these guys are—they're a pretty soulful group, and their songs are pretty amazing when you listen into the messages of them. And so, I always find I get something different from them every time I listen to them. So they're really good to hear.
Fantastic! Let's have a quick listen.
Joy 94.9.
You're on the Spirit Lounge with the Priest, the Pom, and the Poof. We're speaking with Jake Bartlett, who is our resident spiritual travel expert. We've just been hearing about some spiritual places that we can travel to overseas. What about some spiritual Australian places that we could visit during the Christmas period?
Yeah, well, as mentioned before, I mean, our essence and, you know, spirit of Christmas is very different to the Northern Hemisphere. And for me, Christmas, I guess, growing up has been very much about family and gathering. I come from a very non-religious family, but the essence of Christmas has still been very much alive. And I think in Australia, it's obviously for Christians and for those who follow different religions, we still do the masses and, you know, going to a church day service and things like that. But I really, for the majority, I think, of Australians, well, particularly, I shouldn't say majority, but from my point of view of family, it's been very much just, the Aussie barbecue and, gathering the prawns on the barbie and going to the beach and things like that. And it's more been about the essence of, family and getting together. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the spiritual aspect of it in terms of family. And and there's different pilgrimage sites in Australia, I guess, but I think it's not to the same extent that they have in Europe, obviously we're talking about the Midnight Mass and the Vatican and all things like that. I think it happens to a certain degree in Australia, but probably not to the depth that we have in Europe.
So Mr. P, what was Christmas like for you growing up in Oz?
Christmas is always really great. My mum actually is from overseas, so I just have my dad's side of the family here. And every Christmas we used to have unwrapping presents at my mum and dad's house, and then we would go for a barbecue at my cousin's house in the afternoon. And my cousins lived in the middle of a forest in the Dandenongs. Mm-hmm. And so the whole day was basically us just going bushwalking and, you know, chilling out with the cousins. And, yeah, it was really laid back. And then the other tradition that we had was the day after Christmas, so Boxing Day, we would always go to the local pool. We would book like this big area and all the extended family would get together at the pool for a bit of a barbecue. And then it was tradition on the day after Boxing Day to everybody go their separate ways to go on holidays.
Enough of family.
Yeah.
Enough already.
It's almost like we overdosed in those 2 days and now everybody just needs a break.
Sounds very
familiar. Christmas is so different in the northern and southern hemisphere, isn't it? It's absolutely dictated by the weather and the temperature. I mean, I was raised in the northern hemisphere and, you know, I think one of my fondest memories, and you have to have a real fire going to be able to do this, but as a kid, you know, when you were young enough to still believe in Father Christmas, Santa Claus, you know, you would write your letter to Santa Claus asking for, you know, yes, I've been good all year and yes, I would like these presents, please. And then I distinctly remember very, very young standing there and you know, throwing the letter up with the smoke and it would go up into the chimney. I'm sure that's why chimney sweeps did really well, because everyone had blocked chimneys from all these letters, you know, at Christmas. And we used to leave cookies and milk out, you know, for Santa and Rudolph, because they were going to call by. Never occurred to me when I was young that he would get through millions of homes in one night. And how was that ever possible? Because it was magic, you know. And mysteriously, the cookie and the milk had gone in the morning. And then my father had a big smile on his face, you know. And we just, it was just full of belief, I think, when you're really young. And then the stockings full of things and the presents under the tree. I think Christmas is very much for children, isn't it?
How old were you when you figured out that Santa actually was a farce?
Well, when I was eight, we moved to the States and we had a house which didn't have a real chimney and a real fire.
And that's what gave it away?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you're thinking, how's Santa going
to
do this?
So I was thinking, well, there's no chimney for Santa to come down, so this can't be true. And then, you know, there were horrible people at my school who told me that I was a complete idiot to believe in Father Christmas. And it can blow, you know, when you're young, it kind of blows your mind, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I remember when I was like five, I must have been like four or five, and Mum and Dad never, ever taught us about Santa Claus. They were like, well, this is the nativity story. This is why we celebrate Christmas.
Yeah.
They were all like very practical about it. I think possibly had some of the magic stolen away from me. but I remember like when I started going to school and I said to my mum, I was like, this Santa thing, it just can't be true because it's not in the nativity story anywhere. It doesn't say anything about fat men and chimneys and red Santa suits. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah. I know, it's sweet. But I think also it's, as you grow up, then you appreciate the time spent with family and the meaning of not just giving presents. I hate the fact it's got so commercial and so materialistic.
Yeah.
You know, it is about a time to get the family together. And and I must admit, you know, as a non-church-going person, what I love doing is Christmas Eve, especially going down to my local kirk in Edinburgh in Scotland, where I was christened, and go there. And actually, I do go and I sing carols. And it's a time of reflection. For me, it's a time of reflection. It's probably the only time I do it in the year, but I do it.
Yeah.
And I love singing in the choir. And that's for me, that's a lot of, means a lot.
From a spiritual perspective, I think there's a big difference between the Northern Hemisphere spirituality that happens at Christmas and the Southern Hemisphere. My mum, as I mentioned, was from overseas. She's Northern Hemisphere. So we went back there a couple of times.
Well, your mum's from the States, right?
She's from the States, yeah. So we went back a few times and my relatives in the US are quite conservative Christians. And they did the whole go to church for like 5 days in a row. And, you know, you go along and do that because it's snowing outside. What else are you going to do? Like, we were actually snowed in. There was a blizzard. And so I felt that it was a really very different feeling and a different spiritual experience to my experience of an Australian Christmas, whereby we do still gather together at religious ceremonies, but it might just be like once or twice, like on Christmas Eve and then on Christmas. And then because of the culture of everybody going away, because it's summertime and you've got so many public holidays.
It's more like a holiday, isn't it?
But I think that period of time can also be really spiritual as well, but in a slightly different way, because a lot of people will go away and go camping, for example, be a bit closer to nature. I feel that it's a real kind of experiential, getting close to nature kind of spirituality, not so much the bells and smells kind of spirituality that the churches
sort of time,
create.
Time out, isn't it? About time out.
Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9. You're on the Spirit Lounge, and we've been talking to Jake Bartlett, who is a travel expert. He specialises in spiritual destinations, and we've had a bit of a text in, haven't we? We've had a text in from Avron, who says it's his first time listening to the show, so we hope that you're enjoying it and making a little bucket list of what to go and see and do over the Christmas holiday period.
Absolutely. Yeah, very, very glad to have you on board with us, Avron. And yes, very, very much enjoying listening to all the kinds of different ways you can use this time of year to think about things a bit differently.
So we're going to listen now a little bit more to when we caught up with Jake Bartlett.
Now let's move on to our next destination, because this is totally wacky and totally opposite to everything we've been talking about. Now, Las Vegas is a big hit, is it not? I mean, 12 months a year anyway.
It is, yes, but it's definitely doesn't conjure up images of where you'd particularly go to celebrate Christmas for a religious aspect by any means.
It does not. But over 90,000 people get married there every year.
Yes, I know. It's one of the only places you can get married by Elvis.
You can get married by Elvis?
Elvis is still in the building in Vegas. So yep, you can definitely get married by Elvis.
He's still alive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, of course, they have the Gay Chapel of Las Vegas for our commitment ceremonies for our community. Have you been to Vegas?
I have. I love it. I think it's one of those things that everyone should at least experience once. Mm. I mean, it's one of those places I think people either go and they love it or they hate it. But either way, I think it's something you definitely need to experience. It's quite a spectacular, you know, thing to experience.
When you visited Las Vegas, did you get the feeling like you had to kind of check part of yourself at the door and then pick that up later on? So some of my friends recommended that I go, but they said maybe you should check some of your morals at the door and then see if they're still there when you come out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as sort of, I guess, seedy and sleazy, I guess, as it sort of was conjured up in the earlier, the 50s and the 60s. It was quite known as, you know, Sin City. Of course, that's still there, and it's a place that you go to gamble and all those things, but it's really got a lot of amazing things about it as well. I mean, some of the finest restaurants are in Vegas. There's world-class theatre.
Hotels.
Amazing hotels. Mm. And it's one of the most affordable places to stay in a five-star hotel in Vegas, because there's just so many rooms.
Isn't it?
You know, you can stay in a beautiful five-star hotel for $100 a night. Yep. You know, it's just amazing.
And that's US.
And what they've created with the hotels is amazing. I mean, you go into the Venetian, you feel like you're in Venice. You go into the New York Hotel, you feel like you're in New York. And it's just like amazing. So it's one way you can almost experience all of the US in one small little place. It's got a lot going for
it. It's unique, so, isn't it? I'll tell you who says something really interesting about Las Vegas. I was watching Elton John's Red Piano Tour behind the scenes in Vegas the other night on TV. It's a two-hour program. Fascinating, if you love Elton John, which I do. And what his comment about Las Vegas was, because he's finally done Las Vegas and he's never done it before in his career. And he said, the reason I haven't done it before is it used to be where performers went when they were kind of on their way out. Mm. You know, it was like the dumping ground for has-been performers. Mm. But now, just as you've said, Jake, it's suddenly the cool place to actually do your shows.
Absolutely.
And like Bette Midler, like Cher, like Celine Dion, like all these people have done their huge Cirque du Soleil is there sort of almost permanently. Mm. And and so that's why he's doing Vegas now.
It's great for the artist, because it's almost like the world comes to you, because Vegas is such an iconic destination. I saw Celine Dion there a few years ago.
Wow.
It was the most incredible concert I'd seen, because the stage was built just for her, and it was just an amazing experience. Yeah, so
because there's so much happening kind of every night in Vegas, do you know what kind of celebration happens on Christmas to make it special, to make it Christmas?
I think it's a bit like similar to Australia. I mean, I think it's there if you're looking for it, and those that are celebrating. I think it's, there's definitely aspects of those that want to really celebrate the essence of Christmas, you would still find that. There'd still be churches that would have mass and things like that. But alongside that, you've got those that are just interested in going to the casino and, getting drunk and having a party. And so I think it's really, whatever you go to Vegas to look for, it is there. And I think there's definitely that aspect of spirituality, and, you know, that for those that are living, obviously there's, you know, residents that live in Vegas, and, you know, they would follow their own religions and go to their churches and things probably on Christmas Eve and celebrate that at the same time.
And in fact, one of the most spiritual places that I've ever been to in the world that you can do from Vegas, and if you go, you have to do this, is go to the Grand Canyon. That is definitely up there with Uluru for me. It is one of the most incredible feeling places on our planet. It's beautiful.
Absolutely. I think when we see those amazing spectacles of nature, it does take your breath away. And I think we can, you know, if you're open to the essence of what those iconic landmarks, you know, it just really is a heart-opening experience.
It's actually quite a humbling experience because of the enormity of it and the power of the sheer size of it and beauty.
Yeah, so it's very accessible from Vegas. There's lots of ways to get there, even as a day trip.
You can fly, and you can fly direct to Vegas from Melbourne?
Not direct, but you could go through LA.
Right, pretty easy.
Yeah, it's pretty easy connections, yeah.
You're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and we are looking at the top 10 Christmas destinations for holidays.
Melbourne's biggest gay voice has a fresh new sound.
Fresh new sound.
Joy 94.9.
So you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and we're looking at favourite destinations to go to for Christmas and New Year and the different traditions that are upheld in those countries. Now, we've just been in Vegas because that was just a bit wacky and out there, wasn't it? But there's heaps to do. And we're going to stay in North America and go up to Canada. And of course, we have two distinct groups in Canada because we have the French Canadians and we have the English Canadians. And they do have quite different traditions in terms of how they celebrate Christmas. I think the French Canadians focus more on Christmas Eve, lots of meals, and they have a wonderful thing called the Réveillon meal. And the Réveillon meal is on Christmas Eve after midnight mass, so they eat very late. And the children get small gifts in their stockings, and they get bigger gifts on New Year's Day, not Christmas Day, which is a bit different. The English Canadians celebrate Christmas Day a bit more like we do, and they have prezzies in the morning and they go to church in the afternoon and they have a huge lunch or a huge dinner, similar to us really, kind of roast goose or beef or roast anything you like, really, ham. The North Americans like their ham, don't they? But they have this lovely thing called the kissing ball. Have you heard of the kissing ball?
I haven't, no.
It's cute. It's made of a ring of evergreen branches, and it's decorated with nuts and berries and everything kind of seasonal. And the ring actually symbolises the end of the winter solstice. That's the tradition of it. And when young men would try to catch single women under it and steal a kiss, therefore earning the name kissing ball, which is kind of like what the Americans invented mistletoe for. But maybe this went first. I think mistletoe maybe came after the kissing ball. I like to think that.
It's like the lazy version of the kissing ball, isn't it? There's not nearly as much craftsmanship in mistletoe.
But I was speaking to a friend of mine who's Canadian the other day, and I was saying, because she's going back to Canada for Christmas, and I said, you know, what are you up to? And she said, you know, it's so multicultural and multiracial in Canada now that they've even stopped saying Merry Christmas and they've started to say Happy Holidays, a bit like the Americans. And it's almost like they're frightened in case your religion doesn't celebrate Christmas, which I think is just a bit crazy. And they're now saying Happy Holidays, which I think is a shame because, you know, it's Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you get offended by it. I mean, it's a bit similar sometimes you find within business as well, like come Christmas to acknowledge, you know, because not everyone does celebrate Christmas. And so is that sort of thing about saying Happy Holidays because they might be Jewish or there might be another tradition that doesn't celebrate. But I think the essence of Christmas is, you know, I think it's just a beautiful time of that end of year time. I think everyone's more relaxed and chilled out, and it's just that the nice sense of coming together, which is a really beautiful
aspect. But you can certainly get a white Christmas in Canada, can't you?
You certainly can.
And there's big skiing going on in Whistler and Banff. So what part of Canada would you recommend people to go to if they wanted to go for Christmas?
Oh, definitely, the British Columbia and Alberta regions is so beautiful. I was there a couple of years ago, and that was probably one of the greatest trips I've ever done. It's just spectacular. And I think the Canadians, too, are very similar to Australians. Well, my partner was American, and he often said, you know, you can call a American Canadian, but you never call like a Canadian American. So they don't take that too well. But I think the Canadians, I've always found they're just very relaxed, easygoing sort of people. And Yeah, so a great thing to do is if you fly into Vancouver and then, you know, you've got obviously that is the most amazing city. Mm. And for the gay and lesbian community, I mean, Canada is one of the most tolerant, progressive, accepting countries you can possibly go to. Obviously, gay marriage is already legal and there's, you know, total anti-discrimination throughout the entire country, which is really, really, really fantastic. So, but definitely, you know, there's the great Rocky Mountaineer journey you can do from Vancouver either up to Jasper or across to Banff or up to Whistler. There's several different journeys you can do, and that's a really wonderful experience.
And the nicest way to do that is by train, right?
It is. It's because there's ways to access, you know, other places you really can't see by road. But having said that, doing a road trip is really great too. I actually caught the train up to Jasper and hired a car and then drove down to Calgary through Lake Louise and Banff, and that whole area is just so beautiful. Mm.
But would you do a road trip at wintertime when it's snowy?
not so much, no. I mean, well, the Icefields Parkway does actually close through winter, which is that area, but you can certainly do aspects of it via road and via rail still through those times of year, but you are a little bit more limited with, you know, road accessibility and things in it, because they do have quite an extreme winter and huge snowfalls and things
like that. Does the railroad still run if you go, like if we went over for our holidays, would the railroad still be running in December and January?
Yeah, absolutely. As you know, the rail system runs throughout the year, and it's got a fantastic rail system actually to link the whole country together. So you can definitely do rail all throughout the year, and it's a great way to get around Canada and really experience it.
That's a place I really, really want to go to.
I highly recommend it. Particularly,
it's one of those places where, in my mind, I think that it's kind of like you go there and you get really, really close to nature. Mm. Is that the experience that you had?
Totally, yeah. Because for me, a huge aspect of traveling is getting into nature. And I hiked probably, you know, 70 or 80 k's in the first week, and it was just a feast because there's so many trails. Talking more sort of summer at this time, obviously, don't do as much hiking in winter, but. Getting to see my first bear and, you know, because it's amazing just driving, because you can tell wherever there's wildlife because cars are just pulling off the side of the road and there's either elk or there's, you know, there's bears or there's, you know, it's just all going on, and it's just so, so beautiful. And there's obviously just north on the main other thing that people do also is the cruises up to Alaska. But just, you know, an hour further, sort of north of Vancouver, you start to head into the Great Bear Rainforest. There's a couple of stunning little lodges in there you can do, so you can access those by small cruising vessels. And that, you literally feel like you're the only person on the planet, apart from the other ones that are there. But it's just so remote, so pristine, and the wilderness is just mind-blowing.
I didn't even know that Canada had rainforests.
It's called the Great Bear Rainforest, and it's where the last, you know, in terms of the bear colonies, and there's, you know, killer whales and the huge salmon migrations and all that, that's all going on in that area, and it's just so beautiful and pristine. And it was definitely one of the best trips I think I've ever done.
Melbourne's most lovable station is now giving you more reasons to listen. Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9 in the Spirit Lounge with the Priest, the Prom and the Poof, and we have a very special guest here with us. Katie's joining us in the studio, and she's been helping out behind the panel. You've been sweating away there, working your fingers to the bone, I can see.
It's hard work. It was unexpected that I would be doing this, but I'm very much enjoying it.
Well, you know, rise to the challenge.
Absolutely.
Now, today we've been talking with Jake Bartlett, who has been telling us all about places that you can travel, spiritual places, over the Christmas, New Year's kind of holiday period. So I hope everybody out there is making their bucket list of the places that you need to visit. Let's have a listen to our last little catch up with Jake.
Okay, we've got two more destinations to visit, and we're going to come over this way a bit now, and we're going to visit Mr. P's favourite place, Thailand.
It's not my favourite place. I was just very interested to find out how to celebrate Christmas in Thailand.
Well, of course, 95% of the country is Buddhist. And the remaining 5% really are Christian. So Thailand, I don't think, really recognises Christmas from a religious perspective. I think from a consumer perspective, they do, sadly. So it's great for holidaymakers. But Buddhism is such a tolerant kind of way of life, isn't it? That I think they tolerate other religions, including Christianity. So I think they're quite relaxed about the fact that there's a Christian festival. And I think the Thai people, they like a party, don't they? They like a good party.
They like a good celebration.
So they'll celebrate Christmas. But I know in the West, many Buddhists have come from a Christian culture, and they do actually celebrate Christmas a little bit more in the West. I think those cultures have kind of merged a bit. So although they're Buddhist, they still give gifts and have dinners, and you know, they do kind of participate, and they decorate their temples a lot as well and make them look quite Christmassy over in the West. Richard Gere says something lovely. He explained that Buddhists believe that those religions that are founded on love and compassion are valid spiritual paths. That's nice, isn't it? I like Richard Gere.
That's a beautiful quote.
I haven't heard him quoted before on this show.
There we are. Richard, if you're listening, Merry Christmas.
So if you do find yourself in Thailand over our Christmas, should you be expecting like a really big party, or should you be expecting, I'm just going to sit on the beach all day?
Depends where you go and depends, I guess, what your intention is. But you could definitely party in Bangkok, that's for sure. It's a constant party city and a huge, you know, sort of gay and lesbian scene there as well, in terms of the nightclubs and obviously the ladyboys and all those sort of things that go on as well. So it's quite a scene in Bangkok. But you can also, go to obviously places like Phuket, which is, you know, it's a bit similar to Bali in the sense that you can go to really manic, busy areas, and then you can go to more, you know, quieter areas of the beach as well. So it really depends on what you're wanting to do. And then Koh Samui as well is a really lovely place, very popular with Australians to just go and drop and flops on a kind of holiday, we call them, where you just really want to go and relax and get on a beach. So with those particularly iconic, they're probably the two most popular beach destinations for Australian travellers to Thailand. And, and as I say, you can really just choose. Really a matter of listening to, from our point of view, really listening to our clients' needs and what they're wanting from their holiday, because you definitely don't want to put them in, you know, in an area that's just going to be a nightmare for them. But if you're young and you want the whole party scene, the nightclubs, that's all there. Or if you're really just wanting to retreat and stay in a beautiful five-star hotel with your own private pool villa and butler, and all those things are available as well. So it's got a bit going for everyone. But as you say, it's definitely not something that they would focus particularly on Christmas, because being predominantly a Buddhist country, but it's predominantly, you know, more geared for tourism, because it is our peak time for Australian travellers heading over there, and also the best time sort of weather-wise as well.
Yep.
So it's...
And a load of Brits, believe me, go over there for Christmas year as well.
Absolutely.
Because they want to escape the grotty weather, which they're having now. Mm. Okay, so our final destination tonight, we're going to go back to the white stuff, but it's not snow. We're going to go to Hawaii. Because that's really popular with Australians, isn't it?
It is. It's very accessible now. I mean, it's in terms of about 8 to 10 hours via flight, and it's pretty easy to get there. We've actually got direct flights now from Melbourne as well, which is good. We always just have to go through Sydney. Mm-hmm. So Hawaii is an amazing destination, but I always say to people, please don't just go to Waikiki, because it's a bit like saying I'm going to go to Queensland and just see surface paradise.
Yeah.
It's a fun place. It's an iconic place to do shopping and all those sort of things. It's so cheap, and it's got a great scene. You know, obviously you can just walk along the main stretch and there's hotel after hotel. And so I always recommend for people to experience that for a few nights. Some people just like to stay there, but I always encourage them to, if they got a shorter amount of time, to head up to the North Shore, because as soon as you're about half an hour, 45 minutes out of Waikiki, you start to get an essence of, you know, true Hawaii and sort of stepping back in time. So that's a great way to at least experience the North Island of Oahu, which is the main gateway where you fly into, where Waikiki is. But if you can and you've got the time, I really encourage people to get over to the other islands. My particular favourites are Maui and Kauai. Really, really beautiful places, pristine, you know, nature experiences, waterfalls, great hiking, great beaches, snorkeling, scuba diving, you know, all sorts of things.
So Hawaii is a cluster of islands.
It is, yeah. It's a chain of islands, sort of Kauai right down to the Big Island. The Big Island is still actually obviously growing as we speak, because it's got its active volcano, and that's an amazing experience to go down and actually see the lava flowing into the ocean and realise that this island is actually growing while I'm standing here. You know, it's an amazing experience to see that. And then you can come back in the evening and actually see it, sort of, you know, what you've been standing on during the day is just sort of glowing out of the earth. And
so it's just bubbling all the time.
Yeah, it's coming down, and they've got amazing footage in the museums and stuff of just one of the little towns that was there just literally overnight was just, you know, lava flow just took it out, and there's still cars buried into, you know, into the lava flow and, you know, stuff. It's a great place to do a helicopter trip as well, because a lot of the islands you can't actually see. They're very inaccessible. So like on Kauai, Kauai is often chosen for a lot of the Hollywood movies because the scenery is just so beautiful. Jurassic Park and a lot of those were filmed there. But you can actually go on a helicopter trip right around the island and into Mount Waialele, which is actually the wettest place on Earth. And they take the helicopter in there, and it's just so amazing to experience that. And the Nepali coast as well. Really beautiful scenery. So you can sort of do it from air. You can do sailboats around and all that sort of thing. So winter's not so much the greatest time. It's perfect for surfers. It's when they get the huge waves, you know, the Jaws waves that you often see in the iconic surfing movies. They all come into the North Shore in the winter. So it's great for that. You can certainly travel to Hawaii year-round. I mean, it's, you know, balmy sort of weather, but the weather's just a little bit more unpredictable in winter. And, you know, water's a little bit cooler and all that sort of things. But it's still a great destination for our summer holidays as well, because it's definitely got a lot going for it. And it is a really beautiful destination to go.
And how do the locals celebrate Christmas there? Because the Hawaii, I don't know, I don't even know what religion the Hawaiians are.
It's a good question, actually. I think they have a mixture as well, Christianity and Buddhism and different.
Because they like their festivals and their feasts, don't they?
There's lots of
light festivals and parades and food festivals and theatre and gift fairs. And so they're sort of American, but I think they do it in the Hawaiian way.
They do, and they have obviously the luau, which is sort of the you know, the tourist thing that you can do, or the average sort of encapsulates their culture and their history and things like that, and into show and to dance and to song and all those sort of things, similar to what the Maoris do as well. And just came back from New Zealand recently, and they do a similar thing with their hangis and in their festivals. So yes, I think they celebrate it in the, you know, similar ways that they do throughout the US.
Well, that's been amazing. Now, we have been looking at the top destinations to visit over Christmas with Jake Bartlett of Travel Counsellors. And if you would like to know more about these destinations or discuss your holidays, then, Jake, how do people get hold of you?
You can visit my website, actually, which is travelcounsellors.com.au/Jake Bartlett. Or you can contact me in Melbourne on 9846 4943.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that, and happy planning if you're planning a trip away December, January to one of these exotic locations.
I've got a few on my list now. I'll have to start planning for next year, though.
Yes. Happy Christmas, everyone. However you want to celebrate it.
Exactly. Thank you for joining us, and a Merry Christmas to you, Jake.
Thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.